Good evening, Strong Stance listeners. I'm your host, Eli Strong. And on this episode, I have another spotlight for you. For those not familiar with the format of the different Strong Stance shows, the Strong Stance Spotlight focuses on one individual and their story or projects. Last week, I was in D.C. for work and got a chance to catch up with some friends. One such friend and I started talking about this past month and everything that had transpired. As we both said so many times in our visit, which you'll hear.
June was hard.
Yeah.
June was hard for a lot of reasons and for a lot of people, I'm sure.
That was Benny Rodriguez, the friend I mentioned. But how can Benny, how can we, be so sure that June was so hard for so many people? Well, June is Pride Month, which most people would think would be a time of celebration all around. But it's not that simple. I've talked before on this show about the complexity and place of trans and gender nonconforming people in the framework of the traditional pride. Pride has its roots in the Stonewall riots of 1969 in Greenwich Village, which were started by trans women of color. Yet, as a community, we're left out of many pride celebrations and their planning. This is especially true of QTPOC, or queer and trans people of color. But that's basically true every year at Pride. This year, at about 2 a.m. on June 12th, during a Pride celebration in Orlando, a gunman opened fire at Pulse, a gay nightclub during Latin night. 50 people, including the gunman, were killed, and another 53 were wounded. The queer community then bore witness as so many straight, cis people kept silent or used the event to push Islamophobia or homophobia, or perhaps worse, offered their prayers and condolences for the victims of this tragedy while completely erasing who this tragedy actually affected. Texas Republican Congressman Pete Sessions went so far as to flat out deny that Pulse was even a gay club. And then, 2 days later, House GOP leaders blocked a vote that would have barred federal contractors from discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. DC Pride celebrations were also happening the weekend of Pulse, and that community had at least two of its own anti-LGBT incidences. A gay flag was burned in front of a bar and restaurant in Adams Morgan around the exact time of the Orlando shooting. And then, a day later, Down with the Gay Agenda was spray-painted on the sidewalk in DuPont Circle. And as if all that wasn't enough, another black trans woman, Goddess Diamond, was murdered in New Orleans on June 5th. But most folks had no idea until about a week later. She is presumed to be the 14th trans person murdered in the United States in 2016. So yeah, June was hard. And these events affected people in different ways. And in Benny's case, they weren't the only events that made June emotionally taxing. So we sat down for a chat about Benny's June. Now, before we get to Benny, a little note on the audio. We were sitting on a front porch in the Columbia Heights neighborhood of Washington, D.C. The sounds of D.C. on a summer night, from car motors, pedestrian chatter, baby cries, and emergency sirens, are all pretty clear. It even started to rain for a little bit. The noise is part of the beauty of the city, and it's part of this story. Okay, so, Benny Rodriguez. Benny is a trans Latinx drag and boylesque performer, and basically just an all-around, amazingly open and honest human being. For those taking super close notes, Ben is not an acceptable nickname, though they seem to indulge my occasional use of The Jet. Shout out to all the Sandlot fans. Benny's been on testosterone for a couple years now and recently had top surgery. They had been using male pronouns, but told me that their identification has shifted. Benny now identifies as non-binary.
And as a result, and this is a very recent thing now, I've started using they, them, although most people still call me he. And because I work with a lot of cis people, I'm not really pushing it. And it's hard because I do run in drag space and, and burlesque space. And because we have other names and other personas, you know, the pronoun thing is kind of hard. And like, right. So for me, it's just like in those spaces, in performance spaces, he is fine.
Okay, so you do use he sometimes when you're on stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just been an interesting thing coming out. It was like thinking that you're male, thinking that you're a man, but then realizing that you're not. You know, it was an interesting conversation.
We talked a little more about this shift in Benny's identification, but we soon turned to the events of the past month. Let's start with this. This month, let's just be really honest, this month has been shitty, and it's been really, really hard on a lot of people.
Yeah.
Before we even go into a whole bunch of, obviously, why it's been hard, because obviously there's pride and there's pulse and there's a lot of things that, you know, some things are awful and some things you think would be really great, but they turn out being really difficult.
Right.
Can you just kind of talk me through what this last month has been like for you?
Well, first and foremost, this month has been busy. I started the month off by going to the Philly Trans Health Conference.
Okay.
And I could only stay for the first 2 days because the DC Pride Parade was on Saturday.
Right.
And I was walking with the DC Girly show. So I was just like, I don't want to miss that first and foremost because I don't think a lot of people are going to be marching in the parade. And I want to be a body, but I also want to support as, you know, the DC Girly show first as a burlesque performer, but also as like one of the only like male presenting burlesquers.
Okay.
So it was just kind of like, you know, and also like I love Pride. So it was just, that was kind of like my big thing. The Philly Trans Conference was definitely an experience. I wouldn't call it a positive experience.
Okay.
There was a couple, like, whenever I was at workshops or listening to the people of color there speak, I felt at peace. You know, it was a nice reminder because Lord spoke and Dane spoke.
Right. Just a note here, Lords Ashley Hunter and Lady Dane Adidi are Black trans revolutionaries, artists, and speakers, and they presented at a few sessions at the Philly Trans Health Conference. They are, and have been, doing incredible things in the community, and if you'd like to support their work, you can donate to the Trans Women of Color Collective or buy Dane's books at her website, LadyDaneFE.com. Now, back to Betty.
And the second day, Lord spoke on a panel of all people of color, and it was super refreshing. Like, at first, the interesting thing was that, like, a bunch of Black protesters came in, and they started doing it was kind of like a protest chant, and, you know, they were basically saying, stop the anti-Blackness in this space, and if you don't stop it, we're going to shut it down. And it was something to that effect, you know?
Right.
But it was just like, you don't like my Black skin, I love my Black skin, you know. And these were all Black young protesters. And at first, the person who was also a Black trans woman called security and was just like, escort them out of here. And then, you know, she made a public announcement to the room and was just like, that's not acceptable behavior, blah, blah, blah. And basically, as the conversation went on, after Lourdes introduced what was happening, everyone started talking about their experience as people of color.
Right.
There was an Eastern Pacific, I believe he was Hawaiian, and he does a lot of work in San Francisco, I believe, with homeless youth. That he was just like, hey, how many of y'all identify as trans men? And I raised my hand, you know, very proudly. And then, like, there were other guys that started cheering. And then he was just like, okay, cool. Just so you know, we kind of suck. And I started laughing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just kind of, like, lowered their hands down slowly. And the room was a mixed group of people. But there were predominantly white people.
Right.
A lot of friends I am friends with on Facebook who are Black and who are brown did not have a very positive experience. I even had a trans friend of mine who is a white trans woman. She made a Facebook and she was like, I just got mansplained at the Trans Philly conference. And I messaged her. I was just like, please tell me they weren't trans men.
Yeah.
She was like, well, I'm not going, I didn't know their identity, but they definitely were masculine. So it was just kind of like that. And like, As the speakers started going down and, like, speaking, it was just so, it was like church, because they were talking about the realest stuff that you would ever hope to listen to. And it's just, like, certain people just don't want to hear that, and I'm experiencing that very recently now. But, like, the biggest thing was that, like, they were talking about their experiences as Black trans people. they were talking about their experiences, about how white supremacy affects everyone, mm-hmm. how we're all a product of that, how we all need to fix ourselves, and how trans men, you know, like, as trans men, we experience oppression, we experience discrimination, we experience so much stuff, but it is not to the same degree as trans women.
Of course.
Trans women of color. You and I know that.
Yes.
But there are so many trans men who would be like, what are you talking about? Like, mm-hmm. are you just saying that, like, our pain isn't real? And it's just like, no one's saying that.
Right.
I have PTSD. I suffer from chronic depression. I'm an abuse survivor in many ways.
Okay.
So it's just like, I'm not the only person who is an abuse survivor. I'm not the only person who has been gaslighted their entire lives. I am not the only person who has experienced all of these things. I'm not the only person who has been stopped by police. And I think what people really need to do, especially trans people,
mm-hmm.
is that they need to come outside of their identities and they need to start looking at the greater community.
Yeah.
And that's what people like Lourdes and like Dane and all of these trans women of color are doing. They're working on creating a better space for the next generation of trans and queer people.
Right.
And without their work, what we have in DC, what we have around the world, around the country right now, in places like New York City, in places like California, if it wasn't for women, very strong women like them, those things wouldn't exist. And I think it's important to recognize, and that's something I think that I've been struggling with as a trans man, because my whole thing was that, like, I want to do something for the community. But, you know, and it was just like, why are trans men invisible? And, you know, I was just like, I don't want to be visible like trans women, because the reason why they're visible is because they're being murdered.
Yeah.
They're being butchered.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, that's not the kind of visibility that I think any of us should have, you know?
Right.
Being in that space was really awesome. And a friend of mine also had two workshops, and they were restricted to people of color. The first workshop was how to be a trans hoe, and half the room was white. The second workshop my friend had was Femboy Realness. That was a huge conference room, and almost everybody in that room was white. And it doesn't seem like the people in the conference enforce the restrictions.
Yeah.
Or unless they want to, because I've heard people tell me that, like, this is for trans men, trans women can't come here, trans men can't come into this trans women space, you know, this is for Latinos, blah, blah, blah. But it just seemed to me that, like, with this particular space, they don't seem to care that much. So right before people were leaving, the person who called security on the protesters came back onto the mic, and she was just like, at the beginning of this seminar, I called security on these young queer black folks because they were disrupting something that I thought was supposed to be this. And I was so wrong. And I am so sorry because I almost silenced their voices.
Right.
And I cannot be that person who silences their voices, because if we don't talk about the anti-blackness that is in this space, then it is never going to be addressed and it is never going to be fixed.
Yeah, you know, I do think that it is sad that trans men are invisible in a lot of spaces.
Yeah.
What I find even more sad is that there's a good chunk of trans men that make it a point to not be invisible,
right.
but do it in the wrong way.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
They're not uplifting and supporting the voices of black trans women.
Right.
They're not uplifting and supporting the voices and lived experiences of even other trans men
right.
of color.
And that was, like, my biggest thing with the Philly conference, because I felt like the general attitude of the room was, like, we're all trans, we're all here. And it's just like, yes, we're all trans, but I'm sorry, Mr. Person who's been transitioning and looks cis.
Yeah.
Like, to a point where, like, you can't even be, like, questioned in the street. You're not being stared at.
Yeah.
You know, when you're walking down the street at night.
Right.
And I remind myself of that all the time.
Right.
I walk down this alleyway down, like, right there all mm-hmm. the time to get back to my house. 3 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock at night, it doesn't matter, because you know what? No one's going to be following me down the alleyway because I look like a man. You know?
Right.
It's just like this masculinity that I have achieved, that I have obtained,
right.
protects me. That was kind of like my overall experience with the Philly Trans Health Conference. Like, I'm probably going to go back next year, especially if it's not during DC Pride weekend.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of like, I just did too much.
Yeah. I mean, go from Philly Trans Health, which was not necessarily a positive experience.
Yeah.
You had some positives, you had some negatives, it sound like. and then you come home to what is supposed to be a celebratory time, and literally right in the middle of it, right? Because DC Pride, for folks that don't know, is like parade and kind of party-ish on Saturday, festival and party-ish on Sunday, and Pulse happens smack in the middle of that, right?
Right.
So you came home for Pride. Did that kind of help? So the reason why I'm asking this is it's not like I've known you for a few years.
Yeah.
We've never been like super tight because we've both been super busy.
Yeah.
But I've known you for a few years. And I feel like this month, kind of watching some of your Facebook posts, there were a lot of things that happened this month.
Yeah.
And not just things that affected everybody, like PTHC, like Pulse, like Pride, right? And also, I'm not saying that Pulse affected white cis folks or just white folks nearly as much as it affected a lot of the Latinx community in the queer space,
right?
Was Pride kind of a haven when you came back from PTHC?
DC Pride is a big deal. Those of us who are in the parade, those of us who are performing, it's like the best and worst time for us because like we're busy. This is work for us, you know, but it's still fun. The parade was supposed to start at 4:30. The parade did not end up starting until 6 o'clock.
So, why am I not surprised?
Right. So we were all very hot. We were all very tired. We were all excited for the parade, but we were, like, so ready to be done with it.
Right.
You know? But once it started, it was, like, the usual, like, parade high that you get when you're walking in the parade. You're, like, so proud of, like, who you are in that moment. I bought a little trans flag from the Philly Trans Health Conference. And, it, you know, this was my first summer that I was able to be shirtless because I just had my top surgery in February.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was so excited. I put duct tape on my nipples because I was with the burlesque troupe. And even though in D.C. women can be shirtless.
Right.
In venues, women cannot show their nipples. So, like, it's common, like, burlesque etiquette that, like, boylesque performers, male burlesque performers,
right?
They wear pasties. You know, it's just kind of
to abide by the same rules that women are forced to live under. Yeah,
right. So I did that, and the experience of feeling the sun and the wind on your chest is like the best feeling ever.
It is,
especially in the Pride Parade, especially when everybody's watching. And I was waving my little trans flag around, and I was so excited because I was just like, this is the first time that I have felt visible as a trans person since my top surgery.
Yeah.
And it was just such a good feeling. And there were lots of people who were cheering. There were lots of people, you know, there was quite a few people who looked at me and said, thank you for waving that flag around. So that was incredibly validating, knowing that I was doing this for myself, but for other people who felt like they couldn't be visible.
Right.
You know, and like I saw a lot of my friends, they like my name was shouted, like people shouted my name. I like hugged people, gave people high fives. I was just like pelting candy at them, you know, the usual.
Yeah.
But but there was at one point where I heard someone, you know, say like while I was waving my flag, you know, what is that? On the other side of like the people saying thank you and like cheering for like the visibility, there were gay men not making eye contact with me, giving me like stink eye. It was upsetting. So after the parade, you know, I went back and I, like, passed out for, like, a couple of hours. Then we went out. And then the next morning I wake up because of it, my friend got a text message from his mom saying, did you see the news? I love you.
Okay.
And I didn't know what was happening. So I open up my laptop, put on Facebook. All of a sudden I see news all over my
all
Facebook.
Over. Yeah.
About the shootings. And I was like, oh, my God, what happened? But you know, we had to be up and we had to be at the festival because I was performing. So I couldn't really, like, think about it at the moment. So, like, after the performance, after I was kind of done walking around the festival, you know, it just kind of hit me. Like, I started processing it, you know?
Right.
I started processing a lot of things at once.
So did you know when you went on stage or when you had to go to Pride that it was a majority Latinx community? Like, were you aware that the majority of the people, almost all of them, were people of color, but the vast majority were folks that identified as Latino? I think there was a couple Latina women. But even greater majority, when I was really looking through a bunch of people, you know, there was one person that was a citizen of Mexico. There was a couple people that I believed were from Dominican Republic, but the vast majority were Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Did you know that at the time when you had to go to Pride and go through all that, or did you not find that out till later?
So it's hard because I did a little bit of research. I saw that it was a Latin night.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if this was just a Latin night, if it was a Latin bar.
Right.
You know, if it was a gay bar for Latinos. But then, you know, later, like, I just didn't know. I just knew that, like, there was a Latino night. So, like, in my head, I was just like, so everyone, the majority of people there were probably Latinx.
Yeah.
And then, like, I, you know, as I was doing some research, I saw a friend of mine who lives in D.C. He's a cis gay man, but he was on the front page of the Washington Post because they took pictures of, like, the festival in the morning when it was starting.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was, like, they had a moment of silence. Because it had just happened the night before.
Right.
So, there was so much happening that, like, I didn't understand that, and I just didn't know that, like you said, that, like, these people weren't just Latinx Americans. They were immigrants. They were, you know, people who weren't from here. There was just so many different types of people there.
Right.
And, you know, again, it's one of those things where you said it, like, they're kind of making it about the greater gay community when it wasn't about them. And one thing that kind of made me realize why I wasn't so affected by it at first was that a friend of mine who was also a burlesque performer, a black burlesque performer,
mm-hmm.
Got stopped in during the festival to be asked by a reporter if they felt afraid to be at the festival.
Right.
And she said, no, because I'm afraid every single day of my life.
Yeah.
I started doing some more research. I saw the text messages. You know, there was a text message that one of the victims sent his mother, you know, while he was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, the text messages said, call the police, mommy, I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I could not take it at that point. And, like, I just started crying my eyes out because I just started thinking about all of the times my mother called me up and said, what are you doing? And I told her I was out dancing. And she was like, you better make sure that you're being careful. Don't drink too much. Don't you do anything stupid. Don't go home with strangers. And I would always roll my eyes at her because, like, we were going to the phase. And because I've always been a part of the queer community in some facet in D.C., it was just like, I'm with my friends. I'm with my people. Nothing's going to happen. I was out doing the exact thing that these people were doing.
Right.
And they were massacred.
Yeah.
But, you know, and of course, politics came into it.
Yeah, the erasure from the political side was astonishing because the erasure came from all sides, right? Within the queer community, there was an erasure of the fact that this was almost all people of color and majority Latinx.
Right.
From outside the queer community, a lot of people were not even, there was even erasure that it was a gay bar, right? And I think that the erasure was awful because we expect erasure outside of our community.
Right.
Obviously there, we've talked about, you know, tonight that there's erasure a lot inside the community.
Right.
But a lot of times when we talk about safe space, different people in the queer community hear in their head different things when they say that phrase, right? Safe space for a lot of people might just mean it's a place where I can truly be myself.
Right.
Not it's a place where nobody's going to be able to walk in and hurt me.
Right.
And in an effect, a safe space in the queer community became insanely unsafe.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I know a lot of people that started to feel like their safe spaces were no longer safe.
Mm-hmm.
But then I knew other people that reacted the opposite way by basically clinging even harder to those safe spaces because they needed to be with queer family in that time, right?
Yeah.
Benny and I talked at length about how the color of a mass shooter's skin can change the narrative in the media, how white shooters are seen as emotionally or mentally disturbed lone wolves, while shooters of color are seen as terrorists or thugs. And then Benny brought up another June event that I had almost forgotten about in the wake of Pulse.
There was a rapist who was going to an Ivy League school who got off with 6 months because the judge didn't want to affect
his future and his life.
You know, so it was a lot.
Yeah.
It's been a hell of a month.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I gotta be honest, it's been a long time since I've been ready to see a month go.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I am ready to see this month
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I think I agree.
I think that, you know, one of the last punches in the gut during all this was, you know, everybody was talking about Pulse, and there was a lot of things being posted, and a lot of information coming out, and a lot of speculation coming out, and when, you know, people are so raw, it's like, I can't take much more of this. And not many people saw this until weeks later, but we find out that a trans woman of color was murdered before Pulse even happened.
Yes.
In New Orleans.
Yes.
Goddess Diamond.
Yes.
And it was sad because it was like shouting into oblivion.
Yeah.
One more time that another trans woman of color has been murdered.
Yeah.
And it was even worse because you're shouting against the noise of Pulse, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, and one more drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
We've lost another member.
Yeah.
Of the trans community.
Yeah.
Another trans woman of color has been murdered.
Yeah.
Another black trans woman has been murdered.
Yeah.
In New Orleans. And I had just been in New Orleans.
Yeah.
A few weeks before.
Yeah.
And it was like you could see it in waves, right? There was when it first came out, because I believe she was murdered on like the 5th.
The 5th, yeah.
Yeah. And news didn't really start trickling out until what, Pulse was on like the 12th?
Yeah.
News didn't start trickling out until like the 14th.
Yeah.
And so you'd see like one or two people post about it on the 14th, and then another week or so passes, and another couple people, oh God, did everybody see this?
Yeah.
Right? And it was harsh. And then what's worse is it was like you said, it could have been me. I could have been in that bar. It could have happened in one of these places in D.C. It wasn't me. I wasn't there. But then we start seeing all this stuff that was happening right at the same time as Pulse. A gay flag gets burned outside of, you know, a bar in Adams Morgan, a bar and restaurant in Adams Morgan. Graffiti in DuPont Circle, which even though, you know, the gay areas of D.C. have kind of dispersed throughout the city.
Yeah.
DuPont Circle is still known as the gayborhood.
It's the gayborhood,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just all of this stuff happening,
yeah.
Did it make Pulse hit closer to home when you start realizing that at the same time somebody is shooting up a bar, like literally almost the same hour, some ass bag in Adams Morgan is lighting fire to rainbow flags?
Yeah. Like, to answer your question and to not beat around the bush, it was scary because I'm literally 15 minutes away from each location.
Right.
Like,
and you mean 15 minutes walking.
Walking.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not talking about it's several miles away.
Yeah, no.
It's like 10 or 15 blocks.
Yeah.
But it was frightening, right? Like, this stuff all coming out in, like, one day.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It was terrifying. It's very upsetting to me. But again, like, it's, at least for me, it's not something I thought about because I don't go to straight bars. I don't really go out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, whenever my space is very intentional. I go to spaces for queer people.
Yeah.
I was going to FaZe when it was open. There were, like, I wasn't going to spaces where I knew I would feel unsafe.
Right.
So, you know, I blocked myself off from that part of society.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because in the last couple of years, just on a personal note, I've actually felt less safe in queer spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, D.C. queer spaces, it just depends, right? Especially in the South, I've started avoiding queer bars because they're so anti-trans.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are pretty anti-black.
Yeah.
And so I did find myself at a lot of straight places. Because here's my thing. I would rather go into a straight cis place and therefore put on my armor than go into a space that I assume is going to be safe.
Right.
Only to get smacked by the people that should make it safe for you and it is not.
Right. So that's my whole thing. And it's just like I found myself angry more than anything else that like people were saying shit like Gay Lives Matter that like, you know, because my whole thing was, how can you say these things but then actively and violently erase the trans community?
Yeah.
How can you do that?
And the communities of color that are within. Like, the QTPOC community is very rarely even recognized, yeah, much less lifted up.
Yeah.
Okay, so I could probably sit here and talk to you all night, but anything else that you want to share about June?
Yeah. When I was talking to my therapist about the Pulse shootings, mm-hmm, he suggested I look into a living will. And that really shook me up, yeah, in the context of things, because the reason I should be looking into this is because I don't know if my family's going to respect my wishes of wanting to be called he or they or even Benny. Right. I don't know who they're going to bury.
Yeah.
In the events that I might be killed at a bar that I'm supposed to feel safe in.
Right.
And all of those things just kind of boiled down to, like, the fact that this month was deemed Pride Month, not just by the community, but by the President of the United States.
Right.
So we're being recognized, but in the midst of our recognition, we are being terrorized.
Right.
And, you know, taking what happened this month in June, mixing it all together with, like, how busy everything was and how I didn't get to process everything yet and how I still have yet to process my top surgery, which happened 4 months ago, and how my transition has officially changed. I'm just trying to figure out how to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is that a lot of people have been saying recently, tomorrow's not promised, tomorrow's not promised, tomorrow's not promised. It's just like, that's kind of where I'm at right now, and I am very happy to see June go.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for asking me.
You have the last word, so whatever you would like to share with our listeners or anything, whether it's something you've been thinking about or words of encouragement or something you want to emphasize or whatever it is, this is literally your moment to say whatever it is that you would, that it's on your mind or that you want to share.
So I'm very open about my personal life on Facebook,
mm-hmm,
and I've gotten a lot of flack from that,
mm-hmm,
but I've also gotten a lot of people who have come up to me thanking me for being so honest and unadulterated about my feelings and how I take care of myself and how I don't take care of myself and how, like, I just manage small things, day-to-day things every day. And the thing is that there are people out there who are so multifaceted, who are so afraid to, like, say what they want to say and be who they want to be. And you can't expect the space to mold to you. You have to make the space.
Right.
You know, you have to make the safe space for you. The space isn't going to be safe just because you walked in there. And one thing, you know, especially for any listeners who are, like, not out or who are young, who are still, like, experiencing and expressing their gender, the thing I just think I'd like to emphasize is just to, like, be who you are. And don't apologize for it just because it might put you in danger, you know, because as queer people, as trans people, as brown people, we are always in potential danger. It doesn't matter. Like, there is never going to be a moment where we can feel like where we can breathe and act like things are okay. And we can't let that hold us down. It's okay to stop and say, hey, I need to take care of myself. Just because the world is telling you you can't doesn't mean that you can't. And I won't say don't be afraid. I say take your fear and use it as a weapon.
I want to once again send out a huge thank you to Benny Rodriguez for sharing their time and experience. We talked about a lot of issues tonight, and if you want further information, you can find reference links in the show notes. Thanks to the network's executive producer, Anise Mabry. And of course, a heartfelt thanks to all the Strong Stance listeners. To all the listeners out there, if you want your voice heard or if you have a story to tell, send me an email at thestrongstance@gmail.com. Until next time, this is Eli Strong, and you've been listening to The Strong Stance Spotlight.